We are, I think, a pretty sharp bunch, don't you think? I mean, I wasn't meaning how we look, although you look great too. I mean, we're pretty smart. We can figure things out. We've got our ear to the ground. We've got our eyes open. We've got all those other things that we say. And we usually know what's going on. When we think something's happening, we're usually right. Now, there are exceptions, of course. People like, I don't know if any of you were watching Britain's Got Talent when Susan Boyle came out. And you looked at her and you heard the music and you went, whoa, that surprised us. Some of the surprises aren't that beautiful. Like Graham James. We thought he was a great coach and, oh man, were we disappointed. That caught us by surprise. Or the residential schools. When we heard about that, we thought, that shouldn't be. The church is there to build up and help and nurture. And how does this happen? Some of those things happen in our lives and in the church as well. Sometimes you meet people in the church and you bumped into them for a long time, sat next to them, even shared a hymn book with them, and you figure they're okay, they're ordinary people. And then there's a need and you see them dig in and you think, wow, they are amazing. I never knew. It surprises us. Sometimes the surprise goes the other way. There are people you think of as pillars, and it turns out they're just into control or whatever. Sometimes you have families walking in the church, always everything together, and then you discover, well, it's not always like that. There's something called the magic parking lot. Have you heard of this? They fight all the way to the church. As soon as they turn onto the parking lot, everybody's smiling. I guess we all have stuff in our lives that would surprise other people. In fact, some of us have stuff in our lives that surprises us from time to time. It's kind of like, you know, the story of the Trojan horse. The Greeks were surrounding the city of Troy for 10 years. They couldn't seem to break them down, so they built this big wooden horse, hid a few soldiers in there, then they sailed away. And the people in Troy thought, oh, what a nice gift. They're not as smart as we are. And so they pulled it into the city and said, we'll use this as a trophy of the spoils of war or whatever. And then the soldiers snuck out of the horse, opened the doors, everybody came in, and they got beat. That's how it is. It's not what it seems, just like the story we read a little while ago. And that's how it was with poor Joseph. Now, Joseph would have been a great guy, I'm sure. Mary brought him home the first day. I'm sure her mother said to her, this is a keeper. Hang on to this one. Good guy, kind and thoughtful. And so when Mary comes to Joseph and she says, Joseph, I'm pregnant, but it's not what you think. Joseph goes, there is nothing else to think. What am I supposed to do with this? And so, you know the story. He says, I can't be with somebody I can't trust. And so he wanted to do it in as kind and polite a way as he could, but he was going to say to her, we can't do this, Mary, because how am I ever going to trust you in the future? And then he has a dream. And in the dream, the angel says, no, really, Joseph, it's not what you think. Now, Joseph could have woke up in the morning and said, I really have to stop eating pizza before I go to bed. I had the craziest dreams. But he didn't. He said, I don't get it, but okay. And he jumps in with both feet. An amazing story. So, as I was pondering on this story, there's a couple of things came to mind this week. One of them, and you have to kind of back up and embrace the whole Christmas story for this one, is trying to think about things that aren't as they seem. I realized we need to start before the Christmas story, and that is in our world. Our world isn't what it seems, just like it wasn't in Joseph's time. We live in a world that tells us how to be happy. Well, to be happy, they say, you need to be popular or rich or powerful or beautiful or something like that. And when you get there, you will be happy. And so we work at it really hard. And what happens? When we get there, not so happy. It's a little bit like the carrot on the stick in front of the donkey to keep it going. You know, why do you think they keep changing fashions every year, for those of you who care about that? They do it because you're never quite there. As long as the carrot's out there, we're going to keep moving, right? But the fact of the matter is, it's disappointment that comes when we finally achieve what's supposed to make us happy, and we wake up in the morning and we find out we're still us, and the world is still the world, and nothing's really changed. In the news this last week, there's a fellow called Tom Crist, I think is his name. You may have read about him. He won $40 million. So he should be happy now, right? Well, it turns out he was already happy. Now, I don't know anything about this guy, but he turns around and gives the whole $40 million away. He says, I don't need that. All we know is they interviewed him, and he said his wife had died a few years earlier of cancer. This wasn't going to change that. He had enough. And so him and his family had talked about it. They were going to give it all away. And I read that and I think, this guy's got it figured out. Happiness has nothing to do with that $40 million. If you weren't happy before it, you weren't happy after it. I don't mean to destroy all the revenue of Lottery Canada, but it's a bit of a waste. Well, the second thing I learned from the story is that things aren't like they seem with God. Joseph found that out. But it's like that with everything. We stand and see the world from one place. God stands and sees it from another. And if you read through the Bible, it's again and again. Like, for instance, the children of Israel are taking off from the Egyptians. The Egyptian army's behind them, and they're running, and Moses says, we're going to make it. And they come over a hill. There's the Red Sea. And Moses says, keep going. And they said, there's no road. And Moses says, yes, there is. It's just covered up with water. He says, God, can you move the water, please? Water moves. They keep on going. It's not what they thought. Or Jericho. They come into the land. God says, I'm going to give you this land. They said, great. They come to the city and they look at God. It's got a big wall around it. How are we going to get the city? God says, no problem. Send the grade 8 band around there a few times. The walls will fall down. And they did. God is always surprising us with the way that he does something. Like becoming human. God becoming human. That one never ceases to amaze me. The creator becoming the created. Solving the problem of an unhappy world by dying on a cross. There's the answer, rather than with force. Very often in the church, we've kind of had the attitude, in the larger church at least, that Jesus' attitude was something of an aberration. If you want to know what God was, you look in the Old Testament, he's drowning people and going to war, and in Revelation, he just nukes everybody who's bothered him through history. And we say, that's God, this is an aberration, and the answer is no. Jesus is where we truly understand who God was. Sometimes we read our Bible through the peep sight of our own anger and unhappiness. Walter Wangren wrote a very powerful story called The Rag Man, where he has this person coming along and he responds to the needs and the brokenness of the people by accepting into himself their brokenness, a very powerful picture of the incarnation. I invite you and encourage you to read that. The third thing that we see based in the Joseph story is that God invites us to step out in faith. God, this upside down God, says, come, just like he said to Joseph, it's okay, marry her, it's going to work out. God calls us to act and live in ways that are not in keeping with the way our world lines up. He says, for instance, love your neighbors and all your family and your enemies. Doesn't come out where we think. And he says, if you want to be the greatest, be the servant of all. If someone demands something of you, do it and a little extra. You'll be amazed how that changes them. The measure of a person is not their degrees or their job or their house or their bank account or their position or their popularity. It's based on the love they have for others, a love that is self-sacrificial. Who'd have thought it? The invitation for us, like Joseph, is to say yes to God, even when things aren't the way that we think they are, and then, like Joseph, to jump in the deep end. Well, there's one more thing, and this is an important one for Christmas. There is joy in following the way of God. We don't know exactly how Joseph responded after this. We don't get a sense. But for everybody else, we see that. Zechariah, John's father, was elated when he found out he was going to have a son. Most people would have been. They would have been excited because now they had a son to look after them in their old age. That's not a hint for my children, but I hope they heard it. But Zechariah knew what was coming, and he knew that his son was going to run around in the desert and eat bugs. And what made him excited was that his son was the beginning of God's redemption on earth. Read it. It's called the Benedictus. It's absolutely fascinating, the last dozen verses of chapter 1 of Luke. Or Mary. Mary is also very excited. We read her song last week in Luke 1, 46 to 55. She wasn't getting anything. Her descendants don't get royalties on all the Christmas songs. There's nothing she gets out of this. Why is she happy? Her joy is rooted in the fact that she is privileged to be a part of God's movement in history. Look what God is doing, and I am a part of this? Wow, amazing. Or the shepherds. They were out there dancing. These are the first Pentecostals. Joseph was the first Mennonite. No response. Just, okay. What did the shepherds get from this? In fact, it would almost seem to be the opposite. They were shepherds. They'd come to terms with this. Okay, this is what we're going to do. And they go and see this, and it's so exciting. And what happens next? Back to being shepherds. But something happened in that process. They recognized there was something larger than their life. That God was at work, and they saw it, and they were touched by experiencing God in the manger. Something larger. Or the wise men, overjoyed. Again, the wise men didn't get anything out of this. We would expect good businessmen like this, that they would have made some connections along the way, that they would get some benefit out of it later, like meeting Bill Gates or something. It took several years out of their life. It probably cost them a lot of money. And the reason they were excited was because they realized that they were recognizing, they were witnessing, they were a part of a turning point in history. They could see it in the stars. Others couldn't, but they could. Amazing. The root of joy in the Bible is always connecting with God. Like Psalm 19 or 119, the joy of experiencing God in Scripture. Fascinating verses. Or the joy of following the way of Jesus. If you read the Beatitudes, happy is, happy is, happy is. And we see all of those things, again, aren't in keeping with what our world would say would make you happy. But that is the message of joy. Or the joy in experiencing God's presence. The stories of God's faithfulness. And as I've been visiting and getting to know some of you, I hear those stories from you. Stories of looking back and say, God was so faithful. And there's a joy in that, knowing that God cares for you, even through the difficult times. The experience of God through the Spirit and the church and through nature and all of the things that we experience when we slow down and listen. We've had several Advent retreats here, and those were times when we would just slow down and look at Scripture and contemplate our life. There's one more coming. I believe it's in January the 3rd. I invite you to come and join us at the church. And the promise of a future. Again, as I sit with people who have most of their life behind them, they look back and they say, God has been faithful. And we look at our family and we are so grateful. And then they say, but there's more to come. There's more to come. This is not the end. The promise is for an eternity with God, and the joy radiates from their faces. where does that leave us? It doesn't mean that we need to give more, or that we need to get more involved or help more or sit on more boards. It simply means, like Joseph, listening for the small voice of God, no matter how it comes to us, and respond. May God give you the strength, the courage to do that, and to experience the joy that comes from following Him.